Sam, keeping it true, watching old movies so you don't have to. With the benefit of hindsight, we'll see where the movies truly are, or did it change history? Good evening and welcome back to the Benefit of Hindsight podcast, the movie podcast in which a father and son talk about movies that we watched together long ago. We give the movie a memory score and then re-watch the movie to see whether or not the movie is better or worse than we remember. With me as ever is my son Sam. Good evening, Sam.
Good evening, Dad. How are you doing?
Yeah, I'm good, actually. Yeah, after a very busy week, we're back, so it's good to have you back. I came on last week to do this recording. I waited for hours and you didn't show up. Where were you?
So regular listeners of the podcast will probably notice that there wasn't an advert in the Transformers episode. There was. I recorded it. And what happened was, it was about the Autobots and the Decepticons. They weren't happy with it. They were part of the brand deal. And so they took me away to space and said, we don't like that brand deal. So I wasn't able to make it in time for the recording.
That would explain why we were absent last week.
You can just blame them. It's not my fault. I tried.
Okay, well, apologies to our listener who missed us last week. It turns out it was the Autobots and Decepticons not being happy with a brand deal. And there was me just thinking it was like work and stuff.
That's what they wanted me to say, but here I tell the truth. And nothing but the truth.
If Sector 7 get in touch, we know that we've said too much on our podcast.
No comment.
No comment. So apart from being taken away into space by the Decepticons and the Autobots over a branding deal, anything you want to share with our audience about your week?
Well, no.
Okay, well, we'll move straight on to our emails. We have had a few emails actually asking us where we were. And it turns out Autobots and Decepticons is the answer and nothing at all to do with different work commitments and the inability to time a recording session. Nothing at all to do with that. But we have had a couple of emails, and one email came through from Crawley, which is in Sussex in the UK. Thank you for that. I know Crawley quite well. And this email is from Hugh. And Hugh says, amongst other things, nice about the podcast and missed you this week and so on. But his question for us to answer is that apparently I have mentioned more than once throughout the series that technology can often really badly date a movie. I think that's true. I have said that more than once. Hugh asks, is there an example in which technology actually makes a movie better?
It depends on the context. Would it be technology that's based in the world of the movie or technology from the real world in a movie?
I don't know. Hugh doesn't specify. I think you raise a very good point, though, about what constitutes technology. Because I had a thought immediately when I read the question, and our regular listener will know that I don't share this question with Sam before I've asked the question. But I had a thought, okay? So I don't know whether it makes the movie better, but I'm going to reference Lord of the Rings, The Two Towers, which is a film stuffed with technology, as you know. But in that movie, there's the bit in Helm's Deep where the big orc is running towards the outer wall of the keep, and he's using black powder. They've invented gunpowder. So that's a form of technology that is doing something to drive that plot forward. So I don't know whether that's really what Hugh means, but I don't think that it makes it better, or it's not really relevant to the question. But it is a good example of what we mean by technology, right? Because if you have a really old Nokia phone in 2007, that's going to date that movie back to 2007. I've lost my point there completely. But I just wanted to say that thing about technology. It's whatever is the relevant technology at that time.
Yeah, I get what you mean. It makes sense. It reminded me, this is proper sidetrack, of the TV show Chuck that I mentioned a few times already, where because it was around about 2007 and all of that, the characters and the actors, I don't know about the actors, but the characters go from flip phones and little small phones, and then all of a sudden they're carrying around iPhones. And I think it is just sort of a thing in movies and TV shows where they'll always have the latest product, which is always usually relevant to the film, unless it's really badly dated, like for instance Star Trek. where they had all that technology, and it was just like, well, that's not a real thing in the future. But it is interesting, yeah. If it, I suppose, if it drives the plot forward, then as long as it's relevant to the time and dated to the time, then it makes sense. But in the case that you always bring up a lot, that it dates it sometimes, it doesn't really work.
No, I think you're right about that. And there are two things to say about what you've just said. One is Star Trek actually predicted quite a lot of future technology, or at least influenced future technology. So Captain Kirk's communicator is a flip thing, and that's apparently why the flip phone was invented. And the other one I was going to say is technology really only dates a movie if that movie's set on the Earth of the present. Otherwise, technology is perfectly acceptable. If you look at something like Star Wars, there's all kinds of different technology in there that you would never, ever challenge because it's trying not to exist in the real world. I don't know if that answers your question, Hugh. I've actually forgotten what the question was. It seems about hours ago since we started discussing it.
It does. I don't know if it answers the question, but it was an interesting discussion.
It really was. Thanks, Hugh, for that good question. So I think our answer is best use of technology to drive a plot forward would be in things where the technology exists outside of what we understand to be the real world. Because inevitably it's going to be dated. In 10 years' time, there'll be people getting out their iPhone 15 in movies, and we'll be thinking, crikey, that's dated the movie.
Yeah. It'll be interesting if we end up in a scenario like Star Wars, where we go, wow, Star Wars spaceships really date the movie because now we've got this and it's nothing like it.
Yeah.
But we'll never know.
Look at all those people bragging about light speed travel. You never know. So we went away and we watched The Tale of Despero, the 2008 animated classic. And it's obviously taken us 2 weeks to watch it, and absolutely nothing to do with Sam being taken into space or work conflicts or whichever version of that you want to believe. So we went away, we watched The Tale of Despero. I need to remind myself what I gave it as my memory score. I believe I gave it a 6.
You did, yeah, and I gave it a 7 out of 10. The aggregate score was 6.5 as well.
6.5 for The Tale of Despero. So, Sam, I'm going to let you start. First of all, my question is always, has your score changed?
I think my score has changed, yes. It's an interesting one, I think. This could be another awkward conversation where we don't know how to continue it with each other, but we'll see how it goes, I think. Yeah, has your score changed?
Yeah, I think it definitely has. I have a Tale of Despero question. Maybe you can help me with it. And the question is, oh, it's more of a statement, really. I don't actually know who the movie is for.
Yeah, me neither, to be honest. I think as the story itself doesn't really have, I want to say, a specific one main character, I feel like in the sense of that, it's a few little stories within that could be for a few different audiences. And I think that works sometimes. I think it probably worked for this film. It's quite interesting. I know it is called The Tale of Despero, but it does include a lot of characters and a lot of stories. I think, if I remember correctly, I could be wrong about this, the book kind of puts it in a sort of, the book lays it out in a way that is, this is one story, this is a second story, this is a third story, etc., etc., and then at the end they come together, but I could be wrong, that is based on memory.
Well, no, I think you're right. I mean, for me, when I was watching it, I was thinking, well, okay, if I'm a kid watching this movie, and you were a kid when it sort of first came out, 10 or 11, you would probably have felt a bit too old for it at the age of 10 or 11. It would be a guess. I don't know.
Possibly,
but then
yeah.
it would seem to be too challenging, either thematically or too many scares or too character driven to be for very young children. And as an adult, exactly what you've just said, there was no real central plot driving it forward to be the hook for an adult watching the movie. So my question is, I don't about who's it really for. I don't really know. It's not a kid's film. It's not a grown-up film that you might take your kids to, like, I don't know, like Watership Down was back in the day. It's just seems to be not clear on who it's for. And I guess it would be called a family movie. And I think that's probably who then went and watched it. We were a family. We went and watched it. We are a family. So that would be my sort of first a main criticism of the movie, really, is I just don't really know who its intended audience was. I think it's too mature for children and not quite mature enough for adults.
Yeah, it's interesting, actually. I don't know if I'm looking into it a bit too much, but obviously it's an animated film, and usually animated films, apart from a few that you've mentioned there, are kind of directed more towards a younger audience. But if you think about the art style of this one, it's not really generic animated cartoony, like the sort of very exaggerated looks to certain characters, like the long drawn faces. And I suppose in a way that could also be for children, but it takes on a very artistic look, I would say, at that point, which I know kids might not appreciate as much as an adult would. Maybe I'm just looking into it too much and rambling, but it's interesting.
It is possible with a film like Despero to overthink it, right? At its heart, it's really about, at its heart, I think it's a movie about three misfits. Despero is a misfit. He's the brave mouse. The rat, whose name escapes me. Rokuro, I think, is the name of the rat. I can't remember. Rokuro the rat. Roscuro. Roscuro the rat, who is also an outcast and a misfit. And the farm girl, who wants to be a princess. They're all outcasts. And I think that's really the point of the movie. It's like, three people who ultimately get what they want at the end, and maybe the point of the movie is that it's okay to be different.
Yeah, and I think it's a case of accepting those differences as well.
There were some nice quirks in the movie, I think. The fact that the whole of the kingdom is based on Soup Day. I looked up Soup Day on the internet. It's not actually a thing, unlike World Otter Day, which is a thing. I couldn't find a Soup Day anywhere, but that's nice. That's quirky. That's funny. And even down to the chef being helped by the vegetable man, who I know is based on that famous Italian painter's depictions of faces and vegetables. But even those little quirks I thought were quite nice.
It's not much of an anecdote, but I remember that we used to have one of those pictures of I think it was a lady made out of fruit.
I think you're probably right. Somewhere hanging in the kitchen, yeah? Next to the back door in the kitchen.
That sounds about right, yeah. I'd forgotten about that, actually.
These are the movie details. So these are the details you don't get in other movie podcasts. Next to the back door, in kitchen, we had a picture. We should have looked up the name of the artist. But if you've seen the movie and you know what we're talking about, it's the faces made of vegetables. But I thought that was just enough quirk. Quite nice. And it sort of gave that movie a little bit of charm. Did you find the movie particularly charming?
I think so, yeah. I mean, there was bits and pieces that I struggled to get into and struggled to enjoy. But I think it's always had that sort of level of charm. I mean, I think we mentioned it in the podcast however many weeks ago before I was captured by Transformers. But I think what we said was it came out around about Christmas. And I think it is a great sort of what should we do between Christmas and New Year's kind of movie. Where you can just sit and enjoy it and find the charm in it and feel sort of, it's not set at Christmas, but it is that kind of loving, warm film that you could return to as like an old friend at Christmas. I know there's people who say they watch certain YouTube videos at Christmas because it reminds them of Christmas and it makes them feel Christmassy. So it is that kind of film, I would say, despite the lack of Christmas. How many times have I just said Christmas?
I counted seven. I counted 17, but if it wasn't 17, maybe it's like Stonehenge. Every time somebody counts it, you get a slightly different number. I was looking at the directing credits for this movie, and one of the directors, Sam Fell, I'm sure you know who he is, but do you know what some of his other movie credits are?
I do, yeah. It's quite a good collection, really.
There is. So there's the most recent Chicken Run movie, Dawn of the Nugget. Flushed Away, which is another film that we'll cover on this, but he's also directed some Wallace and Gromit.
Yeah, quite impressive.
So, yeah, he certainly knows what he's doing. He certainly knows what he's doing around animation. And the other director, Robert Stevenhagen, I think that's how you say his name. He has been not really a director, but he's been kind of storyboard or head of story on things like Tom and Jerry the movie, The Curse of the Were-Rabbit, The Road to El Dorado. He did some storyboarding for Space Jam and was a supervisor animator and things. So they both have a background in animation. And I think that shows, because I think we should credit the animation for being actually very good.
The animation for me was quite interesting for this one, because it
this isn't a dig at animation from different companies and things like that, but you know when you get those DVD specials of like a discount, it's not a discount Shrek, but you know when you get the Halloween special of Shrek or the Christmas special of Madagascar, that kind of thing. The animation in those always looks a bit cheaper than the actual movie. And I think if this film hadn't been made in 2008, it would have been one of those films that just randomly appears as like a Netflix exclusive where there's only one random famous person in the cast and the animation isn't quite as good. So I think it benefits from that coming out in 2008, and it makes it look good. And I think it already mentioned the artistic choices of things like that, but it works really well, and there's no obvious errors about it. So I think it works quite well.
I thought that the world building of the animation was particularly striking. So I think the Mouse City, the Rat City, even the bits of the in inverted commas, the human world that we see was actually really nicely done. And even the sort of character animation I thought was great. I thought Despero was really well animated at times. So I thought the animation was really good. You said something there that jogged an interest in memory, and it's slightly off topic, but there was a fashion, I think, sort of in the late 90s and the early 2000s, when there had been a successful animated movie, to then do a rehash of the animated movie, and they'd often be given to the B team, and they would send them off and say, okay, we want Aladdin 2. This one's going to go straight to video. And do you know the Toy Story anecdote about that?
Possibly, yeah. I think I might know what you're gonna say.
Yeah, so if I could jog your memory on this then. So Toy Story had come out, I think, what, 95, very early, had been super duper successful. So they wanted to do another straight to video one. So they gave it to the B team and said, right, off you go. They're not really that interested in what they're doing. They give them some money, but not a massive budget. And when they come back with their movie, the Disney studio go, guys, that's amazing. That's far too good to release on video and straight to DVD or whatever. We're going to have to put this out at the cinema. You have blown us away with what you've done. And they are effectively responsible for Toy Story becoming the franchise it was because they did such a good job. But if you go back and you look at Disney movies, there's always a really bad sequel that's sort of straight to DVD. And it's got actors who aren't the actual actors, but you've got a guy doing the genie in the style of Robin Williams and things.
I don't think I did know that about Toy Story, actually. That's interesting.
I think it's true as well. I think it might be one of those kind of, I don't know, legendy things, but I think it's actually true. Anyway, back to the Tale of Despero. And cast-wise, it does have a really, really good cast. Okay, there's some really good stuff happening with the cast.
It does, and honestly, I think I forgot about most of who's in it. I think I only remembered Emma Watson, and I think that's because I saw her in Harry Potter. So that made like that's what I knew her from. But the other actors, I had no idea.
Well, if you haven't seen the movie and you listen to our podcast and maybe you're thinking, well, maybe is this one I really want to go and watch? Just have a listen to who's in it. So I'm just going to reel off some names of people that are in The Tale of Despero. So first of all, Despero is voiced by Matthew Broderick. Emma Watson, as you've already said, does the princess. Dustin Hoffman does Roscuro's voice. Kevin Kline is Andre. William H. Macy, Stanley Tucci, Kieran Hines, Robbie Coltrane, Tony Hale, Frank Langella. The list just goes on and on and on. Chris Lloyd, Sigourney Weaver, and it just goes on and on forever. That is a properly good cast in 2008.
It is an interesting cast, yeah. And as you mentioned there about Matthew Broderick, I was quite like excited when I saw his name pop up in the credits, and it makes a lot of sense, like in hindsight, ironically, that it was Matthew Broderick. And I think he's got such a great voice, especially for Despero as a character, and I think it works so well. And I think Dustin Hoffman's sort of natural voice that he's got works incredibly well for Roscuro. So I think, yes, it's got great actors, but I think it's got an incredible casting. So the casting director did an amazing job.
I completely agree, as we often do. But there is another point I want to make about the cast, and I don't know that it's fully formed, so bear with me. But I wonder if the cast is, to a certain extent, something to do with some of the issues that the movie has. Some of the issues that we've identified are not really sure who it's for, a bit directionless in terms of the plot. So you've got all these amazing actors taking this really, really seriously, And does it lose a little bit of fun because of that? Because you've got these, like, you know, Frank Langella doing the voice. Does it lose a bit of fun for that, or am I overthinking it again?
I don't know. I think it adds to it. It's interesting because if this was live action, you could argue that it's driven by star power and everyone wants to see the little kids movie with Stanley Tucci, that kind of thing. But I think because you, especially the younger audience, won't know to put a name to the face or a face to the name, then it's quite difficult to say that it was, go see this movie, look at who's in it. So I don't know, I feel like it contradicts the point of who's this for, here's a big cast. I also don't think I've used that in the right sense.
No, but I know exactly what you mean, because you're going to go and see the film as an 11-year-old, Sam, because Emma Watson's in it, and you're familiar with Harry Potter, and so you're going to go and see because you've heard of her. So you might be interested for that. But I don't see many 10 to 13-year-olds handing over the cash at the movies because Dustin Hoffman's doing a voice.
No, neither do I. It's a good point.
And so therefore, as an adult, I'm going to go and say, oh, Dustin Hoffman's doing a voice. I really like Dustin Hoffman. But then I spend half the time thinking, well, who's he doing the voice for? And I haven't seen Dustin Hoffman. And I just wonder if, you know, when sometimes you have these films that are made for children or a younger audience, and they throw in these really well-known actors. And I think sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. And I think one of the times when it does work is, and we've already mentioned this movie, Toy Story, Tom Hanks, Tim Allen, and then the supporting cast is always very, very successful. And I just wonder if there was a little bit of that. Okay, we can throw all these different people at it and all these voices, and maybe it doesn't quite land in the same way that Toy Story did.
Yeah, I'm just wondering how it was advertised. Because by the looks of it, the poster doesn't have any big names on it, and I don't know if it would be in the trailer either. But I don't know. Maybe we're overthinking that.
We shouldn't also underestimate the value of the book as well, because the book had been very, very popular, and that had come out in 2003. It won a medal. You know, it was a really well received book. Kate DeMillo is a really, really well sort of respected writer, and I also think this was a time when books were becoming movies in a way that maybe isn't happening now. Harry Potter, Lord of the Rings, and all of those things have sort of got a bit of traction. Fantasy novels, so maybe there's a little bit of that. But I think the cast were amazing, and I think they did a really, really good job. And so I don't want to be critical of the casting, because as you rightly said, the casting director deserves a medal for getting all those people to sign on. I just wonder if it was just another one of those kind of, is this movie taking itself a bit too seriously, or are we overthinking it? Because there weren't many laughs for children, as it were, or even moments where the kids might have even got excited.
I do think it is kind of a compelling story for kids in the, this is a mouse reading an adventure story and wanting to be a hero. I can see that working for kids, but then not a lot of the movie is wholly based on that, because you've got a rat that listens to that story and takes it for himself and does his own thing, in the sense that he kind of betrays everyone in a way through that. So I don't know, it's interesting.
It is, because it's also an essay on grief as well. The king's grief is that he cancels everything, having lost his wife. Everything's gone. He shuts his wife up in a tower and he sits on his own with a lute for, it's not really clear how long, it could be days, weeks or months, certainly not years. But it's also an essay on grief as well, which is really an interesting thing to have in a movie about a mouse with big ears that's incredibly brave. And I think you're absolutely right. The central character, Despero, is appealing to young people who feel a little bit different, but actually are otherwise heroic. Our regular listeners will know, I always ask Sam how many Academy Awards the movie that we're discussing has been nominated for or won. So Sam, how many Academy Awards do you think, if any, that the Tale of Despero was nominated for?
I want to say that this has had a couple, because I want it, with all the artistic things behind it and the way it's been casted and things like that, that I want it to be a couple. So I'm going to say about two or three.
Oh, you're going to be disappointed. Unfortunately, it's none. It was nominated for a couple of Annie Awards.
Oh, wow.
But didn't win any of those. So no, it didn't. So What do you think did win the Oscar for animated movie? It would either be 2008, 2009. I can never quite figure this out. So movie came out in 2008, so I guess it would be the 2009 Academy Awards. But do you know what won 2008, 2009? You're normally pretty good at this.
I think based on the year, so this came out in 2008, so it would probably be the 2009 Academy Awards. I want to say it would have been WALL-E, but the actual one for 2008 might have been, I don't know, Ratatouille, maybe?
Well, right on both counts. Go you. So yeah, 2008 when it was Ratatouille, and the 2009 one was WALL-E, as you quite rightly say. I think that's probably fair. I think WALL-E probably is better animated than this.
If I was given the choice, I'd probably pick WALL-E as well.
Yeah, I don't know this better than Ratatouille, though.
No, I wouldn't think so.
These might be two movies that we end up talking about anyway, because we definitely saw them at the movies. So there we go, yes. So 2008, 2009, Ratatouille and WALL-E. We might have to do WALL-E. We definitely saw WALL-E at the pictures. I'm not sure about Ratatouille, but we did definitely see WALL-E.
I mean, I'm happy to revisit them, yeah.
You know, do you think they win because they're a good animated film or because they have good animation?
That is a really good question. I want to say good animated film because I know a lot of them have very different animation styles. I don't think Wallace and Gromit, Curse of the Were-Rabbit, would have won it because they used plasticine that year. Yeah, I think it might be...
It's just a really good film that just happens to be animated.
Yeah.
But then that makes me raise a question about Ratatouille, which isn't nearly as good as WALL-E, for example. Anyway, we're off topic.
Yeah, but I think the animation style is still the same for both of those films, or similar at least.
We probably would agree that WALL-E is a better movie than The Tale of Despero, though, right?
Yeah, definitely. Controversial.
Not controversial, but very true. Soundtrack is the other thing that we always cover. Did the soundtrack ever have any particular impact on you?
It did. It was very strange to me. I liked the soundtrack. It wasn't strange, but it was very interesting because it sounded like it could have been done by, I think, three different people. And I was waiting. I didn't want to spoil who actually did it until the credits, and I didn't recognize the name. But there's loads of little melodies in it that sound. One of them sounds like a bit of Harry Potter and the Prisoner of Azkaban. So I don't know if he did that movie. There was a few other bits that sounded a bit Avengers-y. And I know the person who does all of those ones, like Back to the Future and all, a few of the Marvel ones, his name escapes me at the moment, which is annoying. But there's loads of little bits and pieces of those music that sounds the same, and I picked up on that in Tale of Despero, but it wasn't him who did it.
The guy who did it, whose name, the guy who did the music, a guy called William Ross, he is a composer, and he is quite a well-known composer and arranger. By the way, the stuff I'm about to say, I don't know this in my head, I've had to look this up in preparation for this, but what he tends to do mostly in movies is be an orchestrator. So the composer will come up with the line, as you say, the melody line. Then the orchestrator's job then to go in a way and write that for the orchestra. So he's an orchestrator and a conductor and does additional music and things. But actually, some of the stuff that he's done is decent. I mean, the guy's obviously busy, right? So he has done, in the last couple of years, he's done and the new Looney Tunes movie. He was an orchestrator on Indiana Jones and the Dial of Destiny. He was orchestrator and additional composer on the Obi-Wan Kenobi TV miniseries, Coming to America 2, Ghostbusters Afterlife, The Witches, the new version of The Witches. So he's obviously a busy guy, but he's not necessarily known for his compositions. He's known for being an orchestra, but obviously a guy that knows what he's doing. Hence why you then picked up on the themes within the soundtrack.
That makes sense, yeah. That's quite cool as well. When you said that he was an arranger, all I heard was ranger, and I thought of Aragorn.
Yeah, he does that too, yeah. So when he's not doing music, he's the last remaining part of the Numenor bloodline.
Nice.
I didn't have to look that up. That was just geekness that came right out there.
Just a deep cut reference.
a deep cut. Well, that's deeper than deep. Do you have an out-of-pocket take and or trivia for The Tale of Despera? You must have something.
I do. There is not a lot of trivia for this film, would you be surprised?
Well, I'm not surprised, but there you go.
Fair enough. My out-of-pocket take this week is a very important out-of-pocket take. So during this film, obviously there's a lot of vegetables involved with the making of the soup and things like that. They had to digitally edit every single melon to turn it into a marrow. Does that even make sense?
It does, yeah. Hashtag Team Marrow, right? Did they have to do that for the British-American audiences?
They did, yeah. It's definitely not because I used a time machine to go and tell them that. When they were making the film.
Absolutely not, no.
But it's definitely true. Absolutely true.
Wow, there you go. So that's really, really interesting. That, again, whenever I say that's really interesting, you can keep this bit in. Whenever I say that's really interesting, it always sounds like I don't mean that it's interesting. But it is really interesting. Sorry about that. Sorry, listeners, if you think I'm being mean to Sam. I'm not. It is really interesting.
I'm going to blink twice because I'm being held hostage. No, I'm just kidding. I never think of it as like a sarcastic thing or anything like that. It is interesting because it's absolutely true.
Well, absolutely. Of course they would have to do that because, you know that in animation, if you have a melon and or a marrow, you're going to confuse our friends across the pond, as it were. So of course it's true.
Confuse indeed, yeah.
Hashtag Team Marrow. We still doing that?
Always. I have a t-shirt. Always.
Do you really?
Huh?
Do you really have... I don't have a t-shirt. Where did you get a t-shirt from?
I showed you. I made it myself. I don't know if we mentioned this on the podcast, but I do actually have a t-shirt. I think it says Marrow, not Melon, and it's designed very cleverly.
Okay. We're going to have to stick this somewhere so people can see it.
Anyway, I've got... It's from... Not a lot of trivia. I found a few, which I thought maybe a bit obvious, but kind of interesting as well. So, the word Despero, or as I like to think of it, Desperaux, means sorrow or despair in French. And that's a bit of information in the book. And the reader learns in the book that Despero's siblings died, except for him. So his mother named him after the sorrow that she developed as a result of the heartbreak. But it's not in the film. I can understand why it's not in the film, but I just thought it was interesting. In the book.
I'd forgotten that. I have actually read the book, but it was a long time ago I read it, and I'd actually forgotten that.
Yeah, I've read it too, and I think I also forgot.
But that does go back to my point about how the movie is also a little bit of an essay on grief and sadness.
I almost mentioned it, but I knew it was going to be in my trivia, so I held back.
That is actually a very, very good one. I'm not saying the other ones were not, but that one is very, very interesting.
Oh, thanks. There's another one here, which I thought it's interesting, but it also kind of, I don't know, it's weirdly worded. So this is Dustin Hoffman's only fully animated film outside of the Kung Fu Panda films. So it's like, okay, but why have you just sort of said that it isn't at the same time?
This is his only animated film, if you don't count Kung Fu Panda, which he's also in. So it's not his only animated film. It's one of the animated films that Dustin Hoffman has been in.
Yeah, so take that as trivia or not, that's up to you.
That's when you know there's not a lot of trivia for movie, isn't it? Of all the movies that Dustin Hoffman has been in, this is one of them.
It's like saying, this is the only fully animated film to feature a mouse, other than the other ones that you've already seen.
Which also feature a mouse. And rats. Like The Secret of Nim.
The what?
I've lost you there. That's one for the people of my age. There's a really, really good animated movie from early 80s called The Secret of Nim. And it's about mats and rice. It's about rats and mice, not mats and rice. That's a different thing altogether. Box office, hit or flop? What do you reckon, Sam? Hit or flop?
I'm going to say flop, unfortunately.
I don't know that it was a massive flop. But it wasn't a massive hit either. So $60 million budget and a total box office of $86.9 million. So it probably just about cut even once you take into account, you know, things like advertising and so on and so forth. There was a video game. Did we have the video game?
No, I don't even remember there being a video game, actually. No,
apparently there was a video game. You could get it on Nintendo DS, Wii, PlayStation 2, all of that. all of the usual stuff, but I don't have a memory of that.
I should try and track it down and play it, see what it's like. The benefit of hindsight for video games.
Absolutely. There's another whole podcast with that. I was going to say it's really interesting because you would have been PlayStation 2-ing at around about that time. And you would often want the games that were tied into the movies. And you clearly then didn't want the game that tied into Despero, which maybe tells you something about how you felt about the film, really, when it first came out.
See, that's true. And I think that's interesting. But I remember around about that same time, I got a little mouse, Teddy, and I think I named it Despero. So I think I didn't do digital media, but I did like a physical toy as like a plaything for this movie. So it did technically happen, but not with a video game. But it's interesting that you mentioned that, because one of the big ones that I do remember is Spiderwick Chronicles, where they made a tie-in game, and I played that game a lot.
You did, and you read the books a lot as well, and you got very excited when the movies came out. Is the Spiderwick Chronicles movie on our list?
I don't think it is, but it should be.
Should be. That's another one that's going on. Okay. Anything else we want to say about Despero?
Not really. I did, because there was a lack of trivia, I looked at some goofs in the film.
Oh, goofs are good.
There's not a lot of those either.
Is it hard to goof in an animated movie?
You'd think so, but I also think it is easy to do, based on a couple of these examples.
Well, let's have a listen.
So the one that I really like is, it says, when Despero is about to be dropped into the rat dungeon, he has a red string wrapped around his waist, which we obviously knew. It says the camera cuts away to show the dungeon, and when it comes back to see Despero, the red string is missing for one shot. When the camera shows him again before being dropped, the string reappears properly. But I didn't even notice that.
No, I wouldn't have noticed that either. And if it's just one, well, but there you go, there's a little continuity error. Sometimes I think when you see continuity errors in an animated movie, they've done it on purpose.
Yeah, I think that is the case sometimes.
How else would you have done it, you know, because it would be easy to go back and fix it as well. I'm ready to give my benefit of hindsight rewatch score, though, for The Tale of Despero, unless you've got anything else you really desperately want to say.
No, that's it for me, yeah.
So I gave it a 6 based on the fact that I'd found it charming and didn't have a great memory of the movie. And if you listened to the previous podcast, you would have heard the little anecdote, which was it sort of came out between Christmas and New Year and was just a trip to the movies for something to do. But we had obviously enjoyed it, and I gave it a 6, which is slightly better than average. But I think I'm probably going to go down slightly. I think the film is a little bit confusing who it's for. I think that's represented in the box office. I don't think it's a bad film by any stretch of the imagination. I think cast, music, some of the animation's fantastic. I just think the plot meanders a little bit, not really sure. So I'm going to give it a 5 out of 10. I think it's an okay movie, which is what 5 is. So I'm going to go down 1 to give it a 5 out of 10.
I am very much on the same page. I think the way that when I was watching it, the way that I thought about this was, it's a very average film in the sense of the way it tells the story, how it's animated and how it goes. I think it's a perfect sit and watch a random animated film on maybe like a Sunday afternoon. Maybe it's on in the background, maybe you're fully paying attention to it, but it's there as a film. It doesn't go above and beyond what it is. But at the same time, it's not as bad as it could be, as in, like, it could be one of those straight-to-DVD DreamWorks films. No hate on DreamWorks at all, but that's just the analogy I'm using. Analogy might not be the right word. I think it is very much in its own right an average movie. It's good, but it's not bad, but it's just, it's there, it exists, it works. So I'm also going with a 5 out of 10, which is me going a little bit dramatically down. But I think maybe the nostalgia and remembering it as a kid made it go up, I think, yeah.
Okay, so that doesn't do that. That's okay, though, because we've given Tale of Despero 5 overall. That's its aggregate score, which says that we think it's okay. Probably not quite as good as we remember it. I also just think, one last thing to say before we move on, I actually just think there are better examples of children's movies that are essays on grief and heroism and things like that. I just think there are better examples, and I'm going to cite one of them. If you haven't read, and book and movie, and the movie's old and so on, but Charlotte's Web is just far superior as a story and as a movie, as an exercise in grief and heroism. So if you haven't read or seen Charlotte's Web, listeners, you should definitely go and do that if you like that kind of thing.
I don't know if I've seen it properly, to be honest.
Only book I've ever read that made me cry. I'm happy to admit that to an audience. I've read many books, but that's the only one I've ever read that made me cry. I won't give it away.
Cried at a few books. That doesn't quite work for me. There was something I was going to say about this movie, actually, which was, obviously, Despero enjoys reading the book. And I thought he's got a very loving relationship with books. And I thought, if you had to have a book in that respect, what book would you pick?
One that I have a very special relationship with.
Yeah. This might be a completely sidetracked question, but I was interested.
I'm glad you asked. It's such an excellent question because I don't think I can give you a single answer. I'm going to give you three, okay? And they are Charlotte's Web, 100% Charlotte's Web, and not just because I've just mentioned it. I just think it's such a good book for children to read. Never gets old, and it's amazing. Two, Lord of the Rings. You know, 40 years later, I'm still rereading and enjoying very much. And most recently, is a book called Piranesi by Susanna Clarke, which is a masterpiece. So if you've never read Piranesi, you should definitely read that too, have my opinion. What about you? Do you have that book or those books?
So if we're given multiple, then yes. I've got this I read this year and I really liked it. And that is If Cats Disappeared from the World. It's a great book. It's a Japanese book, but it's been translated. That one made me cry, that's for sure. This is slightly controversial, but The Hobbit, which
okay.
I may or may not prefer to the Lord of the Rings books. Don't hate me.
No, I don't hate you at all. It's a great book.
And I think I'm pronouncing it differently to you, but Piranesi is also on my list. Because wow. You recommended it to me and I've really liked it. It's a book that I keep meaning to revisit, actually.
It's such a good book. You know, it's the kind of thing you read where if you've got any pretension of writing or thinking you might have a skill or a talent in writing, and you read that book and you just think, I'm not going to bother because there's just somebody out there that can do this. And that's not even that conception, that idea wouldn't even have occurred to me in a million years. And it's arrived fully realized. Yeah, I love that book. It's related, I think, to Jonathan Strange and Mr. Norrell.
Yeah, I read that one as well, because on your recommendation.
I don't think it's related just by the same author. I think it exists in the same universe, but that might be a whole different podcast from this. So what would be your one-word review, then, of The Tale of Despero?
I mean, I've given it a bit of a in-the-middle score, and it doesn't really match what I've said, but the word I'm going to go for is deep.
Deep. I like that. That's good. It is deeper than you think. My one word review is, I think I'm going to go with something really obvious. I think it's, I don't know, it's nice, but I don't want to use the word nice because nice is like the anti word you should ever use to describe something. I'm going to go with lovely. I think it's a lovely film, but I'm going lovely because I really want to say nice, but I'm going to go with lovely. I think it's your turn to choose our next film this week. Because I'm pretty sure it was me that chose Despero. What do you reckon?
It is, yeah. So I was torn between two movies. Funny enough, one of them that I haven't decided, we have mentioned today.
Interesting.
Do you want to guess what it is, or should we leave it vague?
Well, I don't know. Spiderwick or something like that. Wally, I don't know.
It's definitely something we will be revisiting, I think. But it was going to be Flushed Away.
Okay.
But I've changed my mind, and I'm going to go for one which I don't know if you're going to be fully happy with, but I thought I might go for it, because I want to watch it.
It's not Godzilla again, is it?
Oh, never mind. Flushed Away. No, I'm joking.
Go on.
I've chosen the 2007 classic, directed by Zach Helm, and it's Mr. Magorium's Wonder Emporium.
Oh, no, I'm very happy with that. Okay, Mr. Magorium's Wonder Emporium. Okay. Do you want me to talk about that movie or do you want to go first?
I haven't really thought it through.
I'll talk about that movie then. Okay, I'm really pleased. My memory is that I love this movie. I definitely watched it in 2007. Loved it in 2007. I've watched it a number of times since. I absolutely love it. I have a sock monkey that I made. Or someone made for me. It might have been you or Liz made it for me. And it still sits on my shelf. I love this movie. And I'm very excited to be watching it again. I think it's a masterpiece. That's me going out on a limb.
I think I might also have a sock monkey too. I forgot about that. I forgot it was even in the film.
There you go.
Are you giving a score?
Oh yeah, so I'm gonna give this movie my memory is that it's 10 out of 10. It's a 10.
Wow. See, I think I'm with you on this one. I definitely remember going to see it at the cinema. I think, actually, do you know what? Now that I say it out loud, I think this was the cinema where we went to see it and we had a little table in the middle of the seats. And we thought that was amazing.
I think you might be right. One of the small screens somewhere, because it wasn't the blockbuster of the day. It was just a really small movie. It's one of the ones where you get the table and stuff. Yeah, I think you're right.
See, that's a memory of going to see it, but my memory of actually watching the film, we were starstruck, I think, is a good word to say. We really enjoyed it, and we really liked it. And I think on repeat watching, when it came out on DVD, maybe even video, I don't remember, we really enjoyed it. We sat down and we were like, okay, let's watch this again, without the table in the middle this time. So I'm going to, not quite as high as you, but I'm going to give it an 8 out of 10.
Okay, so that means overall we've given this movie a 9. Which is one of the strongest. I think we gave Wallace and Gromit a 10, right? As far as I know, that's the only 10 we've ever given. And King Kong, which is my favorite movie of all time, apparently, I only gave a 9 to. So, but I don't want to repeat myself, but I think this is just one of. Maybe there's movies out there that don't speak to everybody, but speak to an individual, and this movie definitely speaks to me. I love it. So thanks. I'm really looking forward to watching that one again. Okay. Well, thank you very much for listening to us. We will try and be on weekly, by the way. We should say this, but Sam does have issues still. There are still some legal issues, I understand, with the Autobots and Decepticons.
Yeah, we're just trying to iron it all out. Ironically, the iron that we're using is actually a Decepticon.
Well, okay, really interesting. So hopefully that will pan itself out. If not, then you might find that this is another 2-week wait for the next episode. Which, of course, has absolutely nothing to do with work schedules, conflicting, busy lives, or anything like that. None of that is happening. It is, in fact, the Autobots and Decepticons. I'm not surprised in Megatron. I am disappointed in Optimus Prime.
Yeah. I mean, if you want, I can check right now.
Do you want to just check your emails? Or does he email?
No, he's here. He has to listen legally now.
Oh, just to listen to every podcast legally.
He's in the room.
Oh, just check with him then.
It's a very big room, because he's, you know. Well, can we check?
Yeah, go on.
Optimus. Yeah. All right, to do the podcast. No, the podcast. No, not the boat. The podcast. He says it's fine.
Well, do give him our thanks. So, fortunately, we should be able to get back to our weekly session. Thanks to Optimus Prime. Who he came here to look after us. So, you know, bless him for that. Okay, well, thanks very much for listening to us. We'll be back in a week's time. Hopefully a week's time. Could be two. Optimus. Sort it out, fella. And thanks very much. Did you know that it's world... There's nothing today. I've looked. It's
again.
World... Absolutely nothing. Well, there is a thing that it could be. Okay, so it's the day today is officially the start of what's called the dog days.
Like the song?
Yeah, like Florence and the Machine. So the song The Dog Days is about the dog days of summer, which is the hot, sultry, warm summer days. And today is officially the first day of dog day. That's it.
Oh, wow.
So happy World Dog Day, even though it's not dogs.
Happy World Dog Day.
Probably timestamps this episode as well, doesn't it?
Probably, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, well. Okay, well, that's just about it for us then. So, see you soon. Good night from me.
And good night from me too.
And Optimus Prime.
Wait, hang on. Optimus says good night as well.
Does he?
Something about a cube? Yeah, so I really enjoyed watching this film. I really like its depiction of mice and of rats, and especially about France and food and a lot of cheese as well. And I really appreciate the way that the rat uses the hair of the chef in order to control and cut the food. And Tale of Despero? Oh, I was watching Tale of Despero. Great film, great film. With the benefit of
Hindsight will see, were the movies truly awful, or did they change history?